Demonic Possession, The Media, Trump, Raimondo, and 1984. I'm Justin Katz, and this is Last Impressions. All right, well, first of all, I guess I have to answer the question of what is this? What is Last Impressions? You know, I've got a lot going on in my life. I've got, you know, family issues, a lot of children who raise issues. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, kids do that. I've got house repairs, leaking shower, getting fixed. We're doing a lot at the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity to move things forward in the state, and on OceanStateCurrent.com, if you go there, you'll see I've been posting a whole lot recently. And everybody knows it's just true that when you're overwhelmed and you can't get everything done, the best thing to do is to find new things to add to the list, right? I mean, that's just what you're supposed to do. So here I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately, and I thought it might be an opportunity for some unscripted rambling reactions to things in the news and otherwise, just things I don't get to in a more formal way. And frankly, you know, if you've watched the news recently, everybody has lost their minds. I mean, from protesters to news media to even the president. I mean, everybody's just nuts. And I figured I needed another avenue to join them. It's just writing in a formal way is just not an opportunity to be crazy enough, I guess. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was this show. They don't know if they're going to bring it back for another season, but it's The Exorcist on Fox. And I read about it somewhere, and I caught up, you know, the typical binge-watching thing. And the thing I really like about it is it takes religion seriously. Now, this is the show, if you're around my age, you'll recognize probably the two most famous people in it to you will be Gina Davis, obviously a famous movie star, and Alan Ruck, who was Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I mean, that immediately draws your attention. But the thing that really I like about it is it takes religion seriously. It's not mocking them. It's the priests have real faith. And that's what moves them forward and drives them and gives them the strength to fight back demonic assassination plots against the Pope. So, you know, the storyline's a little contrived. But it's always seemed to me when I watch, the Lord of the Rings movies or something like that, If religious activities were more visual, you know, if instead of just actually, you know, praying for people or helping them deal with spiritual issues in a quiet setting at the back of the church or at the rectory or wherever you might happen to be, if lightning bolts were flying around the room and there are people floating and their heads spinning around, you know, people would take it a lot more seriously. And there's early on in this show, the priests have it's a pretty clear indication of demonic possession of when a teenage girl is speaking ancient languages off the cuff. You know, something's kind of up. And even the church, the bishop and the church fathers are all saying, "Oh no, she just needs a shrink. You don't need an exorcist. The Pope's going to be in town soon, and we don't want to cause any issues." And I thought it was a great play on that. And I think we need to take that sort of stuff more seriously in the future. And speaking of demonic possession, what's up with the Providence Journal? I mean, I have a news feed that comes through my email, and it's getting really hard to tell some days which ones come from the Providence Journal and which ones come from Rhode Island Future, which, if you don't know, is a longstanding left-wing progressive blog in the state, now run by Bob Plain. But whole sections are devoted, it seems like, to reporting negative news about President Donald Trump. And it's just getting to the point where it seems like they're assigning their local reporters to cover national news because we just can't get enough of hatred and antipathy and proving how horrible he is after less than 2 weeks in office. And making it matters worse, it seems like anybody, whether you're talking about our congressional delegation putting out statements based on unsourced rumors that they're hearing in Washington, or you know, activists out there in the world making up stories about what was the one I heard, the the guy said his mom died because of President Trump's executive order on refugees and immigration, when it turned out that the mom had was deceased for days before then. But these people make these allegations or make these statements, and it's news. That's what we're being fed. So you get a single guy, this business owner from Worcester, Massachusetts, of all places, you know, that hick area of the country in Massachusetts, where everybody's a gun-toting conservative, right? So this guy loses his mind at an airport, JFK Airport, and goes after a Muslim airport employee. And that's on my Twitter feed, local people who are, you know, don't strike me as insane, maybe because they don't have podcasts, but they're talking about how these are dark days in America. And then the latest thing is at the University of California in Berkeley, you've got a violent riot with telephone poles being ripped down and set on fire and people being punched out. And it was over a presentation by alt-right writer Milo Yiannopoulos, who, as I understand, is a gay guy who often talks about his affection for dating black guys. So this is the neo-Nazi movement in America, apparently. But that riot, I mean, that's just an understandable reaction to Trump and all the things like stopping votes on cabinet members. That's all just a normal, understandable reaction. You get these long profiles in Newport Daily News a couple weeks ago about the women who are going down to protest Trump, and they've all got dramatic pictures with in front of a black background, looking very artsy, and we're just going to represent our rights. It just, things have seemed to be just in a complete state of flux, and odd things are happening. But of course, now to put some positive spin on this, when odd things are happening, that can be good. I mean, when you've been stuck in a rut, like I think our country has been for, well, I would say probably 16 or more years, but certainly in the last 8 under President Obama, when things are stuck, sometimes, you know, shaking them up is good. And I wasn't a big fan of Donald Trump. In fact, for a while, I was pretty much a never-Trumper, but during the campaign. But sometimes you need just to knock over the deck and reshuffle it. And that can manifest, that when that happens, I think it can manifest in interesting ways. Like this project proposed by former Providence Mayor Joseph Paolino, who's just a very wealthy guy, mostly from real estate, I think. He bought an old hospital, St. Joseph's in South Providence, and wants to make it a multifunctional structure, but the key component is an area for homeless people to have some shelter and get services. And I had to agree initially with Bob Plain from RI Future that this sounds like a good idea. I mean, we want more private activity like this rather than government. I think the way Bob put it was, if I were rich, this is what I would do. Not to digress, but I guess that's what this is for. When I was working in construction in Newport, I got pulled off a job I was doing to go take care of something very quickly at a project we hadn't touched before. And it turned out to be a little mansion right on the water, down the street from Senator Sheldon Whitehouse's home. I think I looked it up. I think it was a $2 million house that had just been purchased by Mr. Paolino. And from what the other construction workers who had been on the project were telling me, he saw it was for sale and he bought it. And I always thought that was hilarious because at the time, I mean, we were struggling to get by with kids and mortgage and all that. And it was if I had come home one day and said, "Hun, I splurged. I lost my self-control for a moment and I bought a new cell phone." I mean, that seemed to be the equivalent of Joseph Paolino going out and buying a $2 million oceanfront house in Newport. But anyway, so he's got the money. But the project, this is how rich people should spend their money, right? That, to justify the way our society operates. But it's not shaping up, I don't think, to be so attractive. I mean, it seems like the way these things go with liberal elites is they think they need to cushion the world for us all. And so it's not just enough to invest your money to help people thrive. It's that you have to tell them how to do it. You know, the first thing that strikes you, obviously, is that when you listen to how he describes what his vision is, he wants to make this a place where he can sort of consolidate government services. So that's the draw, not only for the homeless, but for people who need some kind of subsidized living situation, or even not subsidized, perhaps. But you use this place where they can go. They know they'll have quick access to not only charitable stuff, but government services. And that's sort of like what the Center for Freedom and Prosperity has been calling the dependency portal. I mean, you have this vision of people. There'll be a hallway with booths or separate rooms, and they can just walk through, and they'll be directed through how to get every dollar of welfare and every program they might be eligible for. And it's all right there. I mean, he used the phrase, which is always the red flag, the warning sign, of one-stop shopping. I mean, this isn't shopping. They're not consumers. They're getting stuff for free. So, I mean, that's the one thing that really kind of started to worry me. And the other thing was, and it's small and silly, I quit smoking years and years ago, but this idea that he was going to ban smoking in the building and on the property, it just seemed like such an indication of, this is how we'll get you in this structure. We'll give you all of the fun toys and access to all the programs and common spaces with big TVs and what have you. And we get to tell you can't smoke anywhere. You have to walk off the property in order to smoke. It's sort of like a school. And that's what strikes me about this idea of communal spaces and things like that. I mean, we're either dealing with college, like college dorms. We want to put adults and families into college dorms. Or the other image that comes to mind is convalescent homes, you know, or where my grandmother a few years ago in her late 80s, where, you know, there's just a common area. They're all sort of milling about, and they've got their own room they go back to, but there's always a nurse right there, somebody to provide services. And that doesn't seem like where we should want to go as a society. I mean, to some extent, it was encouraging because the people in the neighborhood, and I wrote about this on OceanStateCurrent.com, were actually very upset about the whole idea. And they came out and were yelling and screaming. And it's clear that they want to be independent adults building their community. So that was kind of encouraging to see that people still want that. We don't want to be pampered and catered to and told what to do. But still, this vision of these people sitting there, and, you know, you can't smoke. And he also said there's going to be a fitness room so people can get fit. Well, you know, the problem with fitness isn't necessarily that people don't have access to the equipment. Or, I mean, you can go out and walk and jog or do push-ups or pull-ups on a bar that's not expensive to buy. The problem is they don't want to do it. So is that going to be the next rule? If you want to stay here and get all these goodies, you have to exercise. And maybe we can put these screens on the wall and people can see you through them, and a social worker can conduct the exercises and make sure you're doing them. And, you know, you might know if you've read it, this is a scene from 1984. It really starts to get scary when we're drawing people into a situation where they can be told what to do and forced to do things. And you know, hey, maybe one upshot will be the state will legalize marijuana, and then obviously we'll tax it for people who can afford it, but maybe taxpayers will subsidize it. And then after they do their exercise in this 1984 factory housing, they can smoke some pot and go calm down and get out of people's hair. But seriously, the thing that is going to happen next, and you know it, is these people are all going to be consolidated, and they'll be readily available for being drawn into political activism and told how to vote, registered. They'll probably make it a polling station so they can just go down the hall, cast their vote for the latest Democrat in office and progressives. And that brings me to our governor, Gina Raimondo, going to high schools to pitch her free college tuition program to students. I mean, I've written a few times that this is just, it's just gross. It's just yuck. You know, this shouldn't be done. And it's almost, it's bizarre that we have to be told, that I have to say anything, that this isn't just understood to be gross. I mean, she's abusing access to these students. I was thinking, I wrote the other day about this woman in Minnesota who her son has gone to the schools, and the schools have hooked him up with healthcare professionals within the state system to take away his mother's parental rights. I think he's 17. Take away his mother's parental rights and then start the process of changing his gender. And she was left completely out of the loop until after the fact, till she was discovered she no longer had parental rights. And this is state documents from the Department of Education in Rhode Island in July, I believe it was, were talking about this sort of attitude where if a student might be transgender and thinks there might be issues at home, the teachers and the school counselors should help the student essentially hide it from his or her parents. This is scary stuff. And Matt Allen mentioned on WPRO last week, related to the kids who walked out of school on Inauguration Day in Providence, that the organizing groups, like the Providence Student Union, are not, I mean, they're mostly probably made up and membership is mostly kids, but there are adults who run these things and get some kind of funding from somewhere to go in and organize these students. So you've got them, you've got the governor going in there to pitch her politics to them. And by the way, she's going to all the urban schools. She was in Central Falls this week, and 98% of high school students in Central Falls are not proficient in math. So pitching a badly conceived, expensive, free tuition program to them seems to me like a little bit of a presumption that only, you know, rubs salt in the wound of this festering wound of this grossness. So now you combine that with people going into this homeless / welfare / community living housing project thing, and it's just going to become another area for them to be indoctrinated. And that starts to get scary and even evil. I mean, here's a positive note. I was thrilled to read the other day, and I'm looking at the Amazon page right now, to find out that George Orwell's 1984 is now the number one bestseller on Amazon. And there are huge sales of it. And what's kind of funny is in a weird way, all this craziness is bringing us back together. Because, you know, 1984 was a huge, repeated subject of conversation among conservatives and Tea Party types during the Obama years, and now the left is jumping in, and progressives, 1984 is the guide to, you know, to Donald Trump's presidency or something like that. So I'm thrilled to see that there's renewed interest in this book. Of course, we should always add the disclaimer, the caveat that this could be contrived. I mean, this book that's on number one on Amazon right now is $7.92. So a wealthy donor on the progressive side could easily buy a whole bunch of copies of this to give away or to burn or whatever progressives do with books. And just as a way, I mean, they got national news on this. This has been spun as just contributing to the anti-Trump a zeitgeist of people are scared. They think they sense that we're on the verge of a dictatorship. So they're going running out and they're buying 1984. I mean, to buy that kind of headline, if you're an activist, might be worth a few wasted books from probably a left-wing publisher. But assuming that's not the case, assuming that spontaneously people who are skeptical about Donald Trump or worried about the direction of the country are going out to Amazon bookstores and buying 1984. I think that's wonderful, because one of the things that we are lacking big time in the United States right now is a common language, a common set of beliefs. And if you want to experiences of things and understanding of how things work, and if you want to have a conversation, if we really want to avoid dictatorship, left wing, right wing, or whatever, what we need is for both sides to have a common thing they can point to, so that when the next Obama comes into office and does this stuff, we can say, hey, remember that book 1984? this was in there. You know that, right? And if they've actually read it, then maybe they'll say, oh yeah, they'll draw the connections. And that's the great thing about art and literature. So like I say, we need to take religion seriously and take culture seriously and have a common understanding of how things work, because otherwise we're just going to keep falling into these traps of craziness where things just get spun and everybody goes in their corners of Facebook and shouts back and forth, and every now and then you lose a friend that you've known since high school, or people just can't take it anymore and they just stop following you, and then there's no common ground. So those are my last impressions. See you later.